Hey guys, welcome to episode 225 of the podcast, which, let's be honest, isn't really 225 because it's a re-release of Zandy's episode. But, you know, Chris Royce, who runs my Twitter account and who is just a marvelous all-around janitor, suggested it because it came up recently on Twitter with a special attention to the amazing portrait of Sting that Zandy did. Oh, it's just it's a really interesting, wonderful, charming episode. So I hope if you haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, you'll take this opportunity. And I think it was a great suggestion, Chris. Thank you so much. And speaking of great suggestions from Chris Royce and Tiana, one of my other regular listeners who has become a pal and who is San Francisco based, so I get to see her at San Francisco events. They came up with a gift exchange program for the holidays, and it's called the JV Gift Club. And I just think it's the cutest thing in the world. I'm totally going to participate in it, and I can't wait. It doesn't take much to do. So here's a little blurb that Chris wrote up for me. Here's how it works. If you want to participate, send an email to chris@christopherroyce.com. That's Christopher, just the way you would normally spell it, and then last name Royce, R-O-Y-C-E, ChristopherRoyce.com, by Friday, December 9th, with your name and a mailing address. So you just have about a day to get involved. It's probably for the hardcore listeners who listen every week and listen right away when the episode downloads. So, and then the second thing is you pick up a copy, new or used, of one of your favorite books from when you were a teen. And don't forget to factor in shipping costs when you shop. And then on Monday, December 12th, you will receive a name and address to send your book to. So, like I said, I'm totally going to participate in it. I'm going to write a little note and get one of my favorite books from when I was a teen. I might even try to think of something I've never brought up before, but that I do love, and send it off. I think that's just a charming idea. And if it's something you're interested in, definitely send your email to chris@christopherroyce.com by, I guess, end of day, Friday, December 9th. And include your name and your mailing address, and then he will send you someone to send something to. I love it. Guys, thank you so much. I hope some of you will do it. I definitely don't fault any of you who don't. I'm sure you have busy lives as well. And I'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
This is what it feels like to be doing your first podcast.
Oh my God.
Can you take it?
I don't know if I can.
Well, we can always bail in the middle.
You might have to wipe me off the floor.
Pretty soon we'll have the balloon drop. That happens about an hour in.
That's what happens on
podcasts? Yeah, this is a five-hour podcast, about an hour in balloon drop.
Okay.
2 hours in, ponies prance
in.
Can't ride them, but they do a little prancy prance in front of you.
Wonderful.
Poop. Leave. You have to sit with the poop smell for an hour, then. But it's manure, right?
Poop.
Yeah, it's different. It's different.
Poop. Yeah.
And then an hour later, a clown comes in, like a rodeo clown.
That I don't like.
Yeah.
That's but the one part I don't like.
He won't fuck with you. He's just there to clean up the cow.
The
pony manure. Yeah. He'll do a little bit where maybe he falls into it face first. Listen, he's very committed to
it. I will laugh even if I don't find it funny, just to make him feel good.
He does also have a single teardrop, but he didn't kill anyone. He's just an old school sad clown. No, Zandy, I'm so excited. You just said, guys, so you know, this is Zandy's first podcast. She just announced that to me right before I started
recording.
I've
listened to podcasts.
Yeah, that's fair.
But yeah. Never done one before. I'm like going to be one of those people who starts talking about themselves and then really loves talking about themselves.
So you're going to be... So I brought you onto a podcast to talk about yourself, but you're going to hold back in fear
No, I won't. But I'm just worried that I'm going to be like in love with... hearing the words coming out. I'm just worried. Yeah. I'm worried you're opening a Pandora's box.
I'm
basically
so excited. This is very exciting.
We'll see.
We'll definitely see. Now I'm just being threatening for no reason.
Yeah. It's scary.
Just to recap, guys, I don't know who cares, but I was excited about doing this podcast episode when we were up at Sketchfest because
I always think of you and David Wayne, your husband, as being in New York.
That's the way I think too.
Right? And you've been, and now you're in LA, and I think same with Showalter in Black too. Sometimes I just can't, I just think of you as always New York. And I feel like the only opportunity I have to see you is if I'm at Sketchfest, if you're at Sketchfest, well, but that's not even true anymore.
It's always lovely seeing you up there. It's might always I lovely say,
having you up
whether
there.
We're in New York or LA.
Thank you very much. How are you? So how long have you been in, like, fully settled in LA?
I don't think I'll ever be fully settled. Yeah,
fair enough.
Here.
I feel that way too.
We came out in late August. So okay. Not
Was that
not
around the same time that Showalter did? I feel like I ran into him and had no idea he had come here.
He maybe came a couple of months before we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And how...
He was the trailblazer.
How are you feeling? I'm wiggling my shoulders. Like, how's it all feeling?
Not to be, I have a hard time talking about this because I don't want to make people who like LA, feel bad or right. defensive. Perhaps I will like it more. It is not ideal for me.
Yeah.
I would say
it's so different. It's just so different than New York.
It's hard to compare, and there's almost no point to compare.
I think that's probably true.
Yeah. But I grew up in New York City, so this is really, really culture shock. Not that I haven't been out here before, but just the idea of not being able to go back is hard.
Yeah.
For a New York City kid.
Yeah, really hard for New York City. Yeah, because so many people I know that end up eventually moving to LA were, you know, they were from Denver and then they lived in New York for 10 years and now they're in LA, or that, you know, they weren't born and raised.
Let's just say if you're brought up in Cleveland, I could see how LA would be. the thought of LA could be more exciting, perhaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let me turn to the positive about your life.
Cleveland is just an example.
And by the way, some people love Cleveland too. I mean,
you
listen.
Know what? Cleveland's motto should be, it's much, much better than you think. Because it really is actually very nice. The winters are brutal, but it is actually...
why did it get such a bad rap to begin with?
I just... Maybe the word is kind of funny, so it's like
it's like a
cut word. I don't know. I think it's the butt of people's jokes, and it's actually quite a lovely town. Smart, interesting people. The weather in the winter is brutal.
And so how is it brutal in comparison to something? Because I think the weather in New York is being fairly brutal.
Well, I mean, I think it is this year, and maybe for many, many, forever. The thing with it, if this is interesting at all, it's got a thing called lake effect, which only happens in I think 7 or 10 places.
Does
it
happen
in the world.
Chicago too? Like Lake Michigan-y kind of stuff?
I believe so. And also in Japan, certain parts of Japan where the weather is just completely temperamental and it can be sunny 1 second and like sleeting the next. And it just seems to just get the crappiest weather imaginable in the winter. The summer is lovely. Gorgeous.
Cleveland in the summer. What took you to Cleveland?
My husband is from there.
Well, there you go.
So I go there.
There you go.
a few times a year.
Yeah. Okay. That's really
funny. And I also did a play there before we were married.
Okay.
And which was a nice experience. But it really has a lot to offer. Not that this is like, you know, I sound like I'm...
You're doing a commercial.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but it's funny because I think one of my last guests, Maria
Thayer,
is like...
But everybody leaves and goes someplace else.
Yeah. But then you maybe get to have the fondness about it that...
Oh, David is so nostalgic.
Yeah.
Like, so nostalgic.
I think people are really proud to be... Yeah, but I was like thinking about the show Hot in Cleveland and stuff as if that's takes place in Cleveland, but it's also the joke being like... For Cleveland, you guys are great looking.
I mean, there's worse, there's worse places to live.
Yeah.
I would definitely.
Oh my gosh.
Say
it
that.
Seems like there's way worse places to live.
Yeah. And you're an hour's flight from New York City.
It's pretty great.
I mean,
there's so many places.
That's so sad that I think of everything as being like how far away from New York City.
You love your hometown. You love hometown. So where were you? Do you grow up in the city proper?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow.
I grew up on the Upper West Side.
Okay. And so, did you have that sort of Woody Allen-esque romance with the city from when you were young, or did you always just think
that's
of it?
That's a very delicate subject right now. Woody Allen and romance.
Let me get to what I'm really saying. Did you not?
Yeah, well, in fact, my father actually was a contemporary of Woody Allen's and wrote with him sometimes.
Oh, my God.
He was a...
Boy, I really don't ever do my homework. It leaves a lot of surprises.
I don't even think it's anywhere, you know, anywhere. But my father was a comedic writer.
Okay.
And did sketch comedy. So
what was your dad's name?
His name was Herb Hartig.
Herb Hartig.
And he was also a
wonderful New York comedian name.
Oh, boy. And... And he and Woody Allen were contemporaries, and Sid Caesar just passed, and my father actually wrote a little bit for Sid Caesar.
Yeah, that's a real legacy kind of world, that Sid Caesar show and that sort of whole era in New York.
He was like one of those Brooklyn boys made good.
Yeah.
Pretty much from when he was born, his impetus was to get out of Brooklyn and move to Manhattan, where the real action was.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. This is a film. I mean, this is what you're describing as a film.
It was kind of a Woody Allen Upper West Side existence, I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, we could talk about Woody Allen until the cows come home, although I don't know if we
I don't
to,
think
but...
anybody, you know, my opinion on this subject is personal, and it doesn't add to the, to clarifying the whole situation.
Understood.
So I don't think I should comment.
Understood. We needn't really discuss it anyway. I mean, I don't necessarily talk about current events at all. Anyway,
oh, but right,
since I accidentally brought it up. Yeah, but I do like the idea of things being timeless. Like, I like the idea of these episodes being a little more timeless than that. The only thing I will say about it, which has nothing to do with guilt or innocence, is just that I cannot imagine being tried in the court of public opinion.
Oh,
I just can't imagine it.
I have a serious...
It's so crazy to me.
I have a serious, serious problem with that. I also have a serious problem with you know, if a girl is trying to tell the truth and nobody hears her, I have a serious problem with that. But the problem is that you can have all the strong feelings in the world you want. We don't know.
Yeah.
And that's the real problem.
Yes.
I don't... Well, anyway, yeah. That's all I want to say about it. I agree.
It's so tricky. I completely agree with you on all counts. But let's get back to you.
So it's probably more interesting to talk.
No. Listen, no, it's been that thing can get hashed out all over everywhere. We don't have to do it here.
It already is.
You know what I mean? But, yes. But like in terms of that sort of, I'm just always interested in, you know, my friends of mine who've had these kind of these upbringings that are either very different and unique, or that have upbringings that could potentially be like ascribed to, you know, a certain sensibility, like what I'm saying about you, like, oh, you know, here you are. I bring this up without even knowing about your dad's career and stuff. But do you have... As a child, is normal just normal to us, or do any of us ever have the sort of outside perspective where we sort of see the life we're having with a kind of lens on
it?
Like, I see the movie Manhattan and I can relate to that as a child. Like, were you?
I had both experiences where I didn't know how other people lived, but I had a feeling that this was weird.
Yeah.
The way that I was growing up.
Yeah.
And part of that was because I lived on the Upper West Side, which was like the bastion of liberalism and what you were describing, like kind of, you know, a kind of Woody Allen, like Hannah and her sisters kind of life.
People sitting in a comfy den with lots of books
and arguing.
And
making jokes and getting mad at each other and then laughing. And then, you know, very kind of intellectual, humor based, you know, I would say heavily like Borscht Belt humor influenced. But then I went to school on the Upper East Side, which is almost a completely different world.
Yeah.
And so I sort of, and then I had to fit into that also. So it made me realize, like, I felt like a perpetual outsider who was like passing for this Upper East Side kid. And so I think I had a kind of watchful take on everything. And I was like, this just seems weird. Yeah. I just don't think people live like this, but I had nothing to really compare it to until I went away to college. And I'm like, yes, it was weird. It was. I was right about that. It's so weird. Not unpleasant, you know, all the time, but very weird.
Yeah. Wait, were you... Am I just imagining this? Again, did not do homework. Do not do homework, especially with people I consider friends. But were you in a Whit Stillman movie or two? Or do you
Because
you might as well have been, based on everything you just said.
I have an acquaintance, Isabel Gillies, who was in a Whit Stillman movie. Uh-huh. But that is the subject of Cosmopolitan, and that was that boy, that was kind of my life.
Yeah, because
he lived on the Upper West Side and was kind of like somewhat embarrassed that he didn't, and he's trying to fit into this world. And I hope I handled it a little better than he did. Right. But yes, that was very much my life.
That's so interesting. So what was your familial structure like in this cozy den with books and people arguing?
It wasn't
and joking?
Cozy. Let's not. It just looked cozy. My dad was a comedy writer, and he actually was on the nightclub circuit along the same time as Nichols and May and Stiller and Mira.
Love it.
And he did a nightclub act. This is before I was born. He did a nightclub act with Paul Mazursky.
Okay, sure.
And then my father was a very, very smart man who maybe took too much stock in his intelligence and wanted to be the boss. And Paul Mazursky reasonably came up to him and said, you know, I think I'd like to try writing some of this material instead of just, you know, performing it.
Right.
And my father said, I'm the writer, you're the performer, and that's where it ends. So Paul Mazursky said, I think I'm going to go off to Hollywood and be very, very, very successful,
interesting.
Which is what he did. And then my father decided he didn't want to work with a man anymore because men gave him trouble. So he was going to work with a woman. And he advertised, and my mom answered.
He advertised?
Mm-hmm. For a comedy duo with a woman, because he thought they would be more compliant.
So it was like in the paper, like she would open up the paper.
Like backstage. I don't know.
Amazing.
Maybe it wasn't backstage, but whatever it was.
I mean, of course you would. I mean, of course that's what
something,
you would do.
Whatever backstage was then, maybe it was backstage, maybe it was. So my mom answered the ad, and then they did this nightclub act about, you know, social mores and amazing relationships, and it's all extremely dated now, but it was like very current then.
Sure, sure.
And they worked the same circuit as Stiller and Mira and blah, blah, blah.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one sister, a younger sister.
Okay.
But they're, you know, then she gave up acting when she had me, and he went into voiceovers. While also writing and stuff, but voiceovers was how he made his living. And so then
because Carrie Kinney too.
Oh, her father and my father were friends.
Oh, that's so
I mean,
cool.
You know, rival friends. They
right.
were,
yeah.
We would, he'd take me to like auditions and, he had a very low voice. Like he did Orson Welles, when people wanted to hire Orson Welles but didn't want the difficulties.
Right.
The problems.
Right.
So, he had a very deep voice, and I believe Carrie's father also has a deep voice. And they would like see each other in audition rooms and go, hello, Herb. Hello, Steve. You know, like try to outlow each other.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was a very small group of people who did voiceovers.
Yeah.
But they did all of them, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I think it. I mean, I almost want to say it's still like that a little bit. It's a very cloistered world somehow.
Totally.
In terms
but things used to run longer, so you could actually make quite a bit of money doing this with just a few commercials airing.
Yeah. So growing up in that world, did you feel the pull to perform and feel like this is kind of in my blood, or did they advise against
it?
You didn't.
I didn't think about it until things started to get tough. I just was like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do.
Oh, okay. So it really was like, and they supported it. They weren't like, don't do what we did.
They, My mom is a little bit like, oh, okay, if you don't want to make money, okay. Right. My father, I think he was just happy that I was doing exactly what he did. He liked me being a reflection of him. So sure, I think sure. that wasn't like, you know, a discordant kind of yeah. thing for him.
And have you lost your dad since? Or is
yeah,
he still,
my yeah. dad passed away a long time ago.
Oh, how long ago?
1991.
Oh, wow. So you were pretty young, huh?
I was, well, I don't want to tell exactly
how old. No, yeah, just
yes, I was. I mean, I don't know. I was like very recently out of college.
Yeah, yeah. And what was he, do you mind if I ask, was he ill or was it sudden?
He was ill. He was a hypochondriac. He really was a little like Woody Allen, to be honest with you.
I think Woody Allen is a product of his environment.
Well,
I mean,
he
in terms
grew
of that
up
perspective,
in the same
so much,
neighborhood as my father yeah. did, and he went to the same college. I think they went to Brooklyn College, yeah. both of them. And it's the hypochondria. You never really knew where the sickness began and the hypochondria ended and the sickness began. It was yeah. very nebulous. Everything was hurting at all times, you know. And but he was genuinely sick but he had diabetes, and then he'd like give himself an injection and then eat a donut, and he'd say like, this is why I haven't have the insulin, so that I can eat the way I want to eat. I'm right. like, yeah, I don't think it works that way, actually. Really don't think so.
That's not really.
Nah,
yeah.
So yeah, he was sick, but it wasn't a total surprise
yeah.
that it happened either.
Did your mom remarry? Did she?
No, she didn't remarry, but she did date someone for a really long time
mm-hmm.
after, but as you know, after he died, I think probably like about 5 years after he died.
Sorry to nose into your parents' business.
Oh, that's a... Okay. I know they won't listen to... I know for sure one of them
no,
won't
I
be
am,
listening to
no,
the podcast.
I am going to... Well, listen, you have no idea how far this reaches. It reaches
you've got tentacles in yeah,
into the other...
At the Bridgehampton Library, I mean, where my mom works. Yeah,
and also my number one listenership, Spirit World.
Spirit World. Oh,
yeah.
God. Okay.
If you need to know whether heaven Lord. Exists, I can tell you right now, certainly the Spirit World does.
Okay.
In fact, we're going to contact your father right now.
Okay.
There's just a lot
really?
Of rolling
this is
surprises.
So, this is very surprising.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Okay. So you knew from a pretty, I mean, you said you just kind of always assumed that you'd do it. Is that,
it was a relief
yeah.
to do it.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Oh, interesting.
It wasn't,
in what way?
Well, my high school, I went to the same place from first grade through 12th grade. And
that's on the Upper East Side.
It's on the Upper
All
East
girls.
Side. They don't really groom people for acting.
Yeah.
Let's just say. Although a couple of actresses have graduated from there. But it's not really what's expected of you.
What's
so,
the vibe like?
You know, I think it's changed a lot since I went there. But, for example, when we left every day, we would curtsy to our
oh.
teachers.
Oh, well.
Which is really why my father wanted me to go there, because he found it charming and very, very un-Brooklyn.
yeah.
We have uniforms. We weren't allowed to wear patched jeans. Let's see. There were so many things we weren't allowed to do. It's hard to even name them. But
were you a good kid, or did you balk against those rules?
No, I was a pretty good kid.
Yeah.
I was a little sly.
Were you?
Yeah, but I wasn't like, well, you had to be.
Yeah.
You had to be. Everybody had to be perfect. That was like kind of one of my problems with the place.
Yeah.
They just didn't have any room for quirkiness. But I think that it's changed a lot, because the headmistress now is more, seems more like a, I don't know, she seems more with the times, and she's a very intelligent, funny person, from what I can tell, from
yeah.
what little contact I've had. But no, it's very WASPy. I mean, it's really WASPy, and I'm Jewish, so I had to keep the Jewish part of me under wraps.
Were there other, but there must have been other Jewish girls.
Sure,
there.
But we were all doing our best impressions of being, being a Protestant.
What, were those the friends that you gravitated towards, or did you end up with a group of mixed, like who,
you know,
who
I
did
actually
you gravitate towards?
Ran away from my, oh. the school I went to is called Spence.
Mm-hmm.
I, for a little while, in college, I kind of ran away from them. And the nice thing is that as we've gotten older, I realized that They are really nice people, and we don't do exactly the same things, but really you can appreciate people for the people they are. And I really had a nice class, and I can, when I get together now, it feels very, very comfortable and nice, because we're past trying to put on airs and pretending to be somebody that we're not.
Yeah.
And that is really nice.
Yeah.
And we have a history, you know, even if we took really different paths, we were together for some of us for 12 years, you
yeah,
know,
that's
you
share pretty amazing. A lot of and things. If it's a small world, you really are, that does kind yeah. of become like family, in the sense that you, whether or not you love someone in the way that you would love a friend that you just choose to you
right.
know, have a daily contact with, you still kind of, it is, there's a very specific intimacy to being known in that way. I think that's got to be nice to kind of carry away with you if it stays positive, you know, if it is positive, which it sounds like it is.
Yeah, it's like a continuum.
Yeah.
And you feel like there's some kind of pattern to things, which is very comforting.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I just was so resentful of the school for such a long time, but these kids have nothing to do, or women have nothing to do with the school. They're women, you yeah. know, so I can separate them from the school now and see them for who they are, which is really a nice group of women.
Did you have a feeling of, I mean, when you say you resented the school, was it something that you felt on a very regular basis? Like, did you have a feeling of dread going to school? Like,
oh my God. I have to say, through fifth grade, it was a wonderful, wonderful school and a great place for little girls, because they were really nurturing. They had really high standards. You absolutely learned things, but you enjoyed learning, and it was warm, and they had a great art program. It was, I think, the first school to have a computer lab.
Oh, wow.
So everyone came to, we had a wonderful headmaster when I was little, and he was really forward thinking, and it was an absolutely wonderful place. I like to paint and draw, and they really, really encouraged that, and sent a note to my parents saying, I don't know if you know this, but your child has an aptitude in this area. You should, you know, maybe think about, like, you know, encouraging her. It was really great. And then it changed character in sixth grade to a college factory, which I didn't understand until I got out of there, that like, that's how they get people to come in thinking that this is a direct pipeline to Harvard and Brown mm-hmm. and Yale.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in their best interest to get those kids in there so they can say, oh, we have five people at Harvard, or
sure.
three people at Harvard, let's say. So then all my friends became my competitors and they kind of fostered that atmosphere. Mm. And they also pegged you as being a certain type of person. And once you got on that track, it was very hard to get off that track.
And how were you pegged?
Quiet, shy, hardworking, diligent, good girl. And that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it sure is.
If you do anything wrong, you're not a good girl anymore.
Yeah.
It's too
God,
much.
That's hard. It's like, it's hard enough if you're somebody who grows up with a familial relationship where you look, you know, that your father or your mother kind of places those expectations on you. But when you're in a whole community of people where it's like the umbrella places that on you.
Well, for example, I was third in the class. There were six people who were third in the class.
Yeah.
I was terrible at math, but I was considered to be a good student. So I got put in the top math class, and I would literally have a paralyzing stomach cramps before the class and have to go to the nurse's office and lie down. I'd have like panic attacks.
Yeah.
And I kept on saying to them, please put me in they actually called it this, the dummy math class. Please put me in the dummy class. Please.
Oh my God.
They're like, you can do it. You're a good student. I'm like, I'm telling you, I cannot. They're like, just ask questions. I'm like, my question would be like, go over the first thing you said the first day of the first semester and go slowly. You have to have a certain amount of information to ask a question, not like, I don't understand anything.
Right.
So finally, after having like a little mini nervous breakdown, they're like, okay. And I got put in the dummy class. I was so happy. I mean, do I need to know like logarithms?
Yeah. I gotta
do
say,
that in my life.
Yeah. No. And I think if anything, to me, that would just fall. I mean, you hear about that too. And to me, it just fosters like my instant solution is like, well, if I'm going to have to work hard, but it's something I literally don't understand, I'm just going to work really hard at cheating well. Like, that's probably what I would do. You know what I mean? If I was stuck.
I understand having to work at something and get better at it. Like, but to have the expectation that you're not allowed to fail is not fair. Because, agreed. Because you learn a lot by failing.
Agreed. And two, it should also be, I mean, we're also talking about, like, that's what's tricky about schools. And I mean, you know, I could talk about the educational system till the cows come home and probably not come up with any good solutions other than that I just feel so dissatisfied by where we are with it as a country, as many where of us did, do.
You went to public
schools? Yeah, I just went to public schools. Mm-hmm. And I graduated second in my class, and I never felt any pressure about it at all. I didn't even know I was going to.
Where are you from?
From Tucson, Arizona.
Oh.
And I didn't even know. My parents were both public school teachers. Well, my mom was a private school teacher, but before that she had been public school, mm-hmm. but my dad was, and I never felt academic pressure, in part because, you know, I went to a public school that shared a campus with a college prep public school. Oh. And so I took a lot of those classes and vice versa, right, you know, right. And they came over, and so we shared arts classes and stuff. But, I just never felt the pressure, and I honestly didn't even know that I was graduating second until like right before I was, and then I was like, oh, that's a thing. They were like, you're salutatorian. I said, I've literally never heard that word.
What
before.
Is that word?
I don't know what that means. Yeah. So it just, but
I just don't think it, I don't think it has to be this way, even in a private school. I just don't ever see that you have to not love learning. I mean, when I went to college, it was like a total revelation to me that I could be a good student and enjoy what I was doing.
Yeah.
And have a good time. It's like, have a really good time. And I was mature enough to handle my social and my academic demands.
Yeah.
But also New York, I mean, I grew up in New York in the 80s, and I almost feel sorry for people who didn't grow up in New York in the 80s, because socially it was a lot of fun.
I bet. What was your social life like when you, before college, when you were in high school? Well, what was your social life outside of being the quiet, shy, you know, you're supposed to be those
when
things.
I show you the pictures of myself in sixth grade, you'll understand why I had such a good time after I got contact lenses in eighth grade. I will always be a complete and utter nerd, but it did not help that I had like inch thick glasses,
yes,
and long hair that my father wouldn't let me cut, like super long hair. It was totally embarrassing, and my life and the way people perceived me completely changed when I got contact lenses and had the balls to cut my hair,
yeah,
despite what my father, you know, said. It was like night and day, and it's still hard for me to, I don't know, just the way I was perceived was, it with just those two adjustments was kind of crazy. And then nightlife was so extreme, you know, I mean, like I went to clubs.
Did you go to clubs even like when, as like a 14, 15, 16 year old?
I didn't go.
Like what was your awareness?
Well, I'll tell you my first club experience, yeah, which is I had a boyfriend who had a I don't think I should even say it was a prominent person in that society,
okay,
who was pretending to be straight but was gay, uh-huh, mm-hmm, married, pretending to be straight but right, was gay, and we went on his pass to Limelight. And it happened to be gay night, but I didn't know that.
And so, wait, this person was, the person you were dating was gay, or the person?
No. The person I was dating was not gay, yeah, yeah, but he was friends with this.
Oh, gotcha.
Man, gotcha, who was gay, gotcha, and we went on this guy's pass.
Gotcha.
And it was that we were like probably one of the few straight couples in there, and I'm like, is this what clubs are like? Oh my God. And I was terrified and so exhilarated.
Sure.
And it was so different from my school. I mean, it was like literally night and day.
Yeah.
It was literally. And then area, there's this club that was just the best club I've ever been to in my life. It would change themes,
uh-huh,
every few months. And So they had like picture windows, like stores, uh-huh. and they would do like dioramas.
Oh, God, and they would have, I'm in. Everyone would have a magic word for me.
And then they would sometimes change it up and have real people in there too. And sure. you had to sit and like look and see if the people moved to see if they were real people or mannequins. And one time there was this mannequin of Andy Warhol. The theme was death and destruction. And there was this mannequin of Andy Warhol. And I'm like, oh my God, that looks so much like Andy Warhol. And then I looked and it moved. And it was Andy Warhol.
Oh my God, you must have gotten such a kick out of me. That's like,
even at the time, I was like, this is something special.
Yes, absolutely.
This is crazy. And it wasn't like velvet rope like it is now. Yeah. It's like everybody in it together. If you got inside, you got inside. It was like, they played great music. The atmosphere was so great. It was like a little bit dangerous, but they had co-ed bathrooms. I'd never seen that before. Mm-hmm. It was just
and
really,
you were still in high school for sure.
Oh yeah, but they weren't.
It's so
they didn't.
Cool. They didn't. Yeah,
I didn't even have a fake ID.
Yeah,
they just didn't. If you were a girl and you were decent looking, you got in places. You know,
you I always say. Like, I mean, I did a lot.
You weren't sucking your thumb, or right. sometimes even if you
even
were.
If you were,
I don't know. I didn't suck my thumb.
Well, I always say that. Like, I do. I mean, maybe I don't always say this, but I do feel like I'm. Ugh, it's tough because I do have some young listeners and I don't want to encourage them necessarily to make bad choices as young people because I definitely took risks that I would never advise anyone to take. On the flip side of
which
that,
which they're going to do,
which
anyway.
They're going to do anyway. So yeah, I mean that's the thing. Is that like just you're be not smart you're not going to listen
Take
to my
risks,
podcast and make
but
it decision.
Be smart about it.
Exactly, be smart about it. Yeah.
You know, I
be smart
I never
it.
Even though I was in that kind of scene, I never did cocaine. I've never done cocaine. And the way I got out of it, which is so, instead of being cool and saying, I don't do it, thank you very much. Right. I didn't think that sounded good. So I would say like, oh, if people offered, oh, I've done too much already.
I love it. That's a great excuse.
And they
I
were like, everyone's like, yeah.
Yeah, they're high. What are they going to know?
Totally. Yeah. They were like completely blitzed. So smart. They were like, sure, she's totally
super
wired right
smart,
now.
Super smart.
I just didn't,
You weren't feeling it. Well, that's kind of is like
I drank. That's what I did. But I didn't do drugs.
But I think also, I don't know. I guess I feel like now, or even God, even in my 20s, I just didn't have the energy for the clubs and for the crazy and all of that. Like it was kind of like I did it when I had the energy to do it and I had the desire to do it, like, and then I was done.
It was like going to a piece of theater though.
Oh yeah, what you're describing sounds like
I mean,
might
I didn't
still be
do
it
a lot.
It like
I didn't
that.
Do it every week, and I know people who did and were so blasé about it. And I'm like, how can you be blasé about this? This is crazy. Right. Like, this is nuts. You're seeing Andy Warhol. How can you be blasé about this?
Yeah,
nobody gets to see this. This is cool.
That's cool. So you did have that perspective. You did.
Well,
have
I
that
didn't go
some
that
sort
much.
Of awareness. But
my sister was like a bad girl, so my parents kind of focused all their attention on trying to keep her in the house, and so I got like, they thought I was, since I was the good girl, I didn't have
trust
a curfew and stuff like that. Yeah. I didn't really do anything that stupid, I have to say.
What were the boys like that you dated in high school? Were they
well,
bad
my
boys
father didn't
they...
want me to go out with anyone who wasn't Jewish. So I pretty much exclusively went out with non-Jewish guys.
Yes, I was the non-Jew that many Jewish boys went out with
of
for the same reason.
Of course you are. Are you kidding? Oh my God. Yeah. You're like,
Shiksa.
That's what they dream about.
Yeah, so many parents did not like me.
Philip
some of them
Roth
did. Some of them were okay, but yeah.
Oh my gosh,
It was hilarious. Couldn't have been treated worse by some of my boyfriend's parents.
Oh, by your boyfriend's parents?
Yeah, just in terms of
I'm sure they weren't happy.
Yeah, like when you meet them, they just look at you like as if you've done something personally to them. And I was, I wanted to be Jewish, so I always was like, it was such a blow to me every time somebody was like dismissive.
It has nothing to do with you.
So
it's your image of, it's your image.
Yeah.
There's a great play called Sight Unseen.
I don't know it.
Oh my God, it's a great play. And it's like a relationship going backwards kind of.
Uh-huh.
And, it's a non-Jewish woman who is in a relationship with a Jewish artist. That's just one of the themes, but, the last scene is like the first time they met and he's an art student and she's the model and she's like, you know, she's she just is so attracted to him and he's so attracted to her, but he's terrified. And she's like, what is the big deal? It's just like a kiss, you know? And he's like, you don't understand. You represent danger for me. She's like, me? Like, I'm scared of everything. How can I represent danger for you? He's like, you're the outside. You're the unknown. You're like, you know, you have to understand my culture. My culture is like, should I go out to get food? I don't know. It's kind of dark. It's kind of cold. It might take longer than I expect. You know what? Never mind. Let's just stay home. And she's like, that's the weirdest thing I ever heard. But that's like what you probably represented to them.
Interesting. God, that's so interesting. Well, did you? And so, okay. So your dad was, because it's hard to know sometimes about, I was always interested
in. My dad, by the way, my mom is Irish English Catholic. So my dad had he was a total hypocrite.
How did your
hypocrite.
Mom feel about dating? Did she step back and like kind of listen to your dad sort of make what he wanted to be the case? Or was she like,
I think my mom had enough stuff going on that she wasn't, she liked my boyfriends better than I did, I think.
Oh, okay.
Whenever right. like they would break up, she's like, oh, well, you know, he's a very charming. I'm like, can you have my back, please? He's totally horrible. No. Oh, he's a charmer, that one.
Yeah. Did you have a bat mitzvah?
No.
Okay.
My father said.
So this is interesting because, yeah, I suddenly imagine based on what you said.
Well, that would mean you'd have to spend money too.
I see.
No. I mean, we had terrible Jewish education. Really, my education was don't date anyone who's not
Jewish. It's so funny. I really thought I had just cracked open the tip of like, oh, you really were like in that, in a world that we can talk about a little bit. It's so funny that was where
Woody
he
Allen
drew the line.
Woody Allen likes Schickses too.
Yeah.
Woody Allen loves Schickses.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
It's like dipping your toe in something dangerous.
What were the guys like? Okay, so they weren't Jewish. We know that.
No, I did go. I went out with one Jewish guy, I think. Yeah, one Jewish guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you? Where were you meeting these guys?
But they were like equally non-Jewish,
right?
Like me. I mean, they were Jewish in name only.
Yeah. Were they like? How did you? I always ask this stupid question because I'm like, I met my boy, the guys at school. That's not even true. But I'm like, okay, wait, Janet, just because you went to an all-girls school, I've done this to guests before. Like, no, for sure you still have interactions with guys,
okay,
Janet.
So
it's
they
not
were
like you're at a private school far away.
This, my school had a reputation for having pretty blondes. So.
Yeah, I feel like I know that, and I know zero about Spence.
It's like, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow. Gwyneth mm-hmm. Paltrow would be your
did she
ideal.
Go to Spence?
Yes, she did. She's younger than I am.
And she's more waspy?
She's Jewish, too.
Oh, she is.
Yeah,
I
her
guess
dad
that's
is
Bruce
Jewish.
Paltrow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But she's like the ideal. That's like what they, you know. And there would generally be like a group of Buckley guys. This is a school nearby Alan Stevenson. There'd be just like a group of guys hanging outside the school waiting for the girls to get out. And then there was a place called the Stoop, which was like a block and a half away. And it's where you sat on the steps and smoked. I don't know. You know, you like kind of like walked home with somebody and then you ended up, he was your boyfriend.
Yeah.
It was so strange. Or you'd go to like someone's birthday party and you'd play like 3 minutes in the closet and then that person was your boyfriend. I don't really know how it happened. I was totally intimidated by the whole thing. I mean, I have to show you this picture of myself. Like I went from being nobody you would touch with a 10-foot pole to like, who's that one? And it was bewildering to me.
Yeah. Don't you think it's good that you had that first experience to sort of temper
everybody? I recommend being a dork
to
everybody. In fact, like I have a guy friend who's like super, super handsome, but he was like went through such an awkward stage in high school. And the reason he's so sweet is because he still thinks of himself as that awkward boy.
I agree. I feel like you can.
I highly endorse having a really rough adolescence because it makes you into a better person and you have nowhere to go but up.
I agree. That's exactly how I feel.
If you peak in high school, it's just never a good thing.
I know. I completely and totally agree. Did you have your heart broken?
Oh my gosh. So many times. I'm like way overly sensitive.
Yeah.
Way overly sensitive. I'm really romantic too. It's something I've tried to like tamp down a lot because it just does nothing but get me into trouble. But no. And I also, I was like a virgin until my last day of high school. And I like treasured that about myself, but like was so very, you know, passionate also. So it was like so hard. I was like, I think I was my own worst enemy, to be honest with you. Cause I was like, there's this image of me that I have to maintain. And I think I was the key master of that, mm-hmm. of that image. And mm-hmm. I thought that if I didn't have that image, then I wouldn't be me.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Especially this idea. I mean, because it is easy to see this sort of flat surface of the expectation that's placed on you by your school and that environment as being like this good student and this well-behaved. It makes you sound very calm and sort of like consistent.
I think people think I am calm.
And yet, you know, especially that age, like who's calm at that age? Even the most calmest person is like a turmoil inside.
But I was very watchful because I was trying to learn how I should... My home life was so completely different from my school life, and I was trying to learn how to operate within that kind of WASPy framework. So I literally had like the preppy handbook and did not find it ironic in the least. Like I was like, okay, page 6.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
I was like just very quiet and watchful.
Interesting.
And just seeing how people, and because I didn't have the money that some of my friends had to buy the clothes that they had, I kind of, that's when I sort of like got into vintage clothing because I could, you know, look good for, or look okay. I mean, not if you saw the outfits I wore, they're very 80s, but
let me do.
Like I could like, you know, improvise and get an outfit that would like pass as expensive when it wasn't
sure.
expensive. And I actually really, really appreciate that because I think I had to develop style because I had to like find a way around this.
Like Molly Ringwald and Pretty in Pink.
But she
got to be like the kook, but she was known as like the kooky one opposed to sort
I wasn't
of finding
the kooky.
A, yeah,
I was
as opposed
not
to finding a way
one.
To kind of still fit in
right.
and be, you know, doing that kind of stuff. Did you have a sense to, I mean, it's so easy to keep kind of rubber banding or boomeranging back to the very beginning of this conversation, which was like, what makes Los Angeles tricky for you because of your whole experience
I feel
of
like
life.
I'm going through that thing again where I'm just being watchful. I'm like,
yeah.
you know, it's like, it's hard to have to, I have a now that I'm older, I've developed quite a sharp tongue and I can not be sarcastic, but like maybe a little smart alecky. And I also have this like really ridiculous sense of justice in things and it doesn't jibe too well with the way some people act out here.
Yeah.
So I have to hold my tongue all the time because you can't call people out on stuff all the time and expect to work.
I know.
You really can't.
Welcome to why I started the podcast.
I know.
It really is this sort of round two of that kind of like navigating, you know, through.
Just why I have to watch what I say all the time, even though, you know, some people definitely deserve to be called out on bad behavior.
Yeah, I have to say.
It's
I
also
wish.
Not just me. I have to worry about my husband's reputation. Like, he doesn't really want a wife who badmouths everybody.
Of course
like,
not.
That sucks, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, it's so tricky. It's tricky because you really want to believe that the whole idea of like a code of justice and this business is really
I totally
tricky.
I believe that with friendships. And
with
that's
friendships,
why
for
I'm
sure,
so
yeah.
lucky to have the friends that I have. But I have to, like, you know, know when to say something and know when not to say something.
Well, you just want to believe that this is a world, and guys, you know, it comes up because it's Hollywood, but it's not a Hollywood podcast, but I think in terms of like what it represents in a larger way, just what you were saying is you just want to believe that, that somebody who's consistently not a good human being should not be rewarded for that behavior. And it's not just Los Angeles.
But they have to live with themselves and they know what they do. Even if they're, you know, do you think Woody Allen's having a great day right now?
I wouldn't trade places with people who behave poorly.
I'm not saying he did it. I'm not saying he did it. I'm just saying he's done enough stuff that is not good.
Things have been, it's been a tricky, it's been a tricky world for that one.
Yeah. That kind of behavior is, you know, never mind. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, but there's a,
some behavior is cute when you're in your 30s and early 40s, and not so cute when you're 70 and 80.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think that's fair generalization. Mm-hmm. Also, I think that's definitely fair. Yeah, it's. Did you take advantage of the sort of reasons why people go to New York? Then when we talk about the sort completely. Of museums and and going to theater,
completely, yeah. I really did. And you know, the thing that I think that I love about New York, being a teenager in New York, is that you have no excuse to be bored. None. Yeah. There's something going on. So there's true. Too much going on. There's things that are free going on. I went to the museum all the time. I went and did my homework at the Met.
Ah, that's so great.
In the, like, it was so calm and lovely. And I would go there, you know, fairly often to do my homework. And I saw shows. You don't have to worry about drunken driving at all.
Yeah.
If you get drunk, you hop in a cab.
Yeah.
Maybe the cab driver's drunk, but we don't have to know about that.
There's a better chance of being not on the road with drunks than there is in being in LA, that's for sure.
I think so. I mean, yeah. I think like a lot of problems for teenagers happen because they're bored.
That's and just what I was about to say. Yeah.
If you're and bored if in New York, then it's your own damn fault.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Did you with all of that stimuli around you, you mentioned that, you know, aside from performing, that your teacher had said that you had an aptitude also for like visual arts and stuff like that. I mean, did you feel that you had, even in this world of so much stimuli, did you feel you had a rich imagination? Did you feel like did you disappear into books and movies and stuff like that?
I had a wonderful, romantic. Well, I had a wonderful art teacher who's, actually love to know if she's still alive and thank her if I could ever find her. Her name is Diane Martin, and she, I love to paint, and it was a real respite for me. And she gave me the keys to the art room and said, you can stay here as long as you like. Oh. Just, you know, you have to leave by 9, but you can lock up. And I'd put on, we had a record player and they had like 3 records, which were The Cars, Candy O, Hot Rocks. And, they had Cat Stevens. And then what was the other? Oh, Squeeze.
Okay.
They had Squeeze.
The Cars.
Squeeze singles. Squeeze
and, yes. and Cat Stevens.
And they had paint amazing. On them so they would skip. But yeah, I just put them on.
That's such a great image.
And just paint until, you know, 7 or 8 and then leave. And I cannot tell you what a blessing that was. It probably, that and doing theater at Collegiate, which was the boys' school across town. They had a wonderful theater facility. Those were the 2 things that really saved me. I mean, and not only saved me, but just like, I think about all the time.
What a wonderful thing.
So good things can come out of that school. And I had some great teachers too. Really great teachers.
Yeah.
And I know how to write a topic sentence, which is no small thing.
Sure I do.
Oh yeah, you do. I'm sure you do.
Maybe I do. Gosh, my dad, if he listened to this, as an English teacher, would be like,
I don't even know.
You don't know how to write a topic sentence.
I could write a paper on anything.
Yeah.
I really, at this point,
I think I could too, but yeah, it's also because like I was more interested in those subjects, I think, also, and I liked writing a great deal. Even like chore writing, I still kind of enjoyed.
Well, yeah, depending on what you're writing.
Depending on what, yeah.
But this teacher also taught art history, and she gave, I will never forget this assignment she gave. We had to go to MoMA and sit in front of this particular Cézanne painting and just sit in front of it for an hour and write what happens to us, right? What we see. And I'm like, I just can't imagine something worse. Like, this is horrible. You're like a teenager, like sitting still for an hour. Like, this is the worst. This is the worst punishment. And I sat there, and then all of a sudden things started to pop out at me. And I wrote probably the best paper I've ever written in my life that I kept. I'm like, I can't believe I could never write something like
that. That's what
now.
I see. When I see stuff I wrote in like high school and college, I'm like, uh-oh, I must be getting dumber.
Yeah. Oh, I'm definitely dumber. I mean, I'm...
Because we're not exercising those muscles in the same way.
No,
especially
but I know a lot
writing,
about Goosebumps, the show, and I know a lot about Super Y and Thomas the Train. I know
that's
a
fair.
Lot.
That's
a lot
fair.
About...
It's fair to have those be priorities right now.
That's so sad. But, I mean, the fact that... she came up with that idea and trusted teenagers to come up with something really interesting to say. And my paper wasn't like as good as some other people's papers. Mm. It was just such an inspired, wonderful, like adult thing to give a teenager to do. And also just that it was like to just sit there and have to sit there and see what happens is something that like, I don't think a lot of kids get anymore. And I didn't have cell phone. We didn't have cell phones and stuff like that. Our attention is so fractured now.
Let me ask you this real quick. Did you guys go as a group or was that like as an assignment that you like? My question is, could a worse student or a slyer person have just lied and pretend that they'd done that?
Yeah. No.
You were accountable
still
for doing
it. We went for a visit. I think we went for a group visit. And then she said, your assignment is to come back here one time in the next week and sit there for an hour. You could have definitely slacked off.
And I think it's cool that you went.
Understand. I had to follow rules.
But
I would feel so bad if I didn't
I'm interested in the benefit, like what was so tough about it still unlocked some moments for you, including like if you hadn't been such a good kid, she never would have left you with those keys. So it is this sort of like you did get a reward. I don't know this person, but I'm just basing this. I'm making my own Zandy story now in my head, but you know, this idea that you did earn the freedom to be able to have those keys and be in that art room by yourself, listening to those records, which to me is one of the nicest images that's come up for me on the podcast.
That's
I'm just in love with that image. I think it's so beautiful, you know,
and I hope I gave her even like a little bit of the happiness she gave me.
Oh, it's so beautiful, Sandy. I just love it. I just think it's that to me is I. What
and
you
she knew I was going through a rough time too, and we never talked about it. But she just knew that would make me feel good.
It's a beautiful, story. No, I'm so moved.
She was a really special teacher, and I did have some really special teachers there, and I got to remember that and not just feel resentful about that school.
Yeah.
Because it's easy, you know, it's too easy.
Well, the
to
tough
do that.
Stuff is so powerful. I mean, it can create. So we can put up so many walls, and we can box in the experiences that we have that make us, you know, that make us feel those intense negative emotions. They just have so much power, and it's so nice to revisit experiences that have a different kind of power, you know.
Where did you go to college? Did you go to a private college?
I went to school for, these guys know a little bit about this, I think, but I went to school for my first couple of years in Northern Arizona in a very small, just little school.
Oh, so you didn't go really far from home.
I didn't go too far from home, but I went as far from home as I could.
Right.
Because I got, with my graduation, like I got a scholarship, a full ride for 4 years to any school in Arizona because of my, we had zero money. I mean, my parents gave me like $2,000 when I graduated.
They were public school teachers and they didn't make a ton of money. Yeah. It seems so shocking to me.
Yeah. They basically gave me like, I swear it was like $2,000 and we're like, well, but this is what we were able, you know what I mean? It just wasn't. Yeah. And so I had that scholarship. So I used that scholarship and I did love my time there, but I just eventually,
outgrew it.
I just was ready. I really wanted to live in San Francisco. I had visited when I was 13 and I was
oh my God.
Fixated on it.
Of course.
And it was such a priority that finally, literally halfway through, like I had done one semester of my two semesters of junior year. I just flipped out and like quit school and moved to San Francisco to establish residency for a year so I could go to a state school and just put myself through school there.
What did your parents think?
I mean, they were actually pretty cool about it. I don't remember why they were, but I think because I was so solid about knowing, I think it's because I wasn't like, fuck this, you guys. I am going to San Fran.
You're
I was like, I really want to do this for me. And also, I was getting great grades. So it wasn't like
they weren't worried about you.
Yeah. I was like, listen, I have a 3.9 GPA, but I'm going to leave school for a year so that I can finish at, you know, in San Francisco. So it sounded like a good enough plan that they were like, oh, okay, that sounds like a thing.
Right.
You know, and so I think
I'm going to join the circus.
Yeah, it wasn't that. It wasn't that. And they just were never, neither one of my parents was ever like up in my business about college ever or about career ever. I never felt like they pushed me. If anything, I felt maybe I got pushed in the direction of staying being a performer because my dad really believed in me. But I don't know. That is so smart.
I got to remember that when my kids start applying to college to just ease off.
I mean, I turned out okay. Like, you know.
Oh, I think if you know yourself, you choose the college that's right for you that you need.
And I mean, we looked at other places. And, and I got scholarships to – I got partial scholarships to places in the Pacific Northwest because I also really wanted to live there. But I was a very pragmatic child and I was like, I don't want to owe money as a performer. Well, that's probably why your parents
didn't panic, you know, because they knew you would
do anything. But it's so weird to be a pragmatist about performing. You know what I mean? It's like I knew I wanted to be a theater major, but I also knew I didn't think I'd be able to pay back student loans as a theater major.
Right.
So it was a weird twist of I want to do art. I did study theater, but I just paid for, you know, like I went to, I had my scholarship at the first two, and then San Francisco State was really not that expensive. So I just had jobs. It took me a long time.
But was San Francisco expensive to live in?
Yeah, it was expensive. I mean, I was going to school, like I would take like two classes a semester and basically work full time.
Right, right.
You know?
Right.
My
dad is so excited that I wanted to go to a state school.
Yeah.
So excited. Yeah. It was like the least expensive school I applied to. He's like, great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah. Good.
Sounds good. Well, I always tell my friends who have kids, like, I mean, obviously if you make enough money where you can easily afford a school, but it still feels stressful because they're all so expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a different story. But to me, there is something so liberating in my parents being like, well, we did the best we could.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
Yeah.
I don't feel that I was pushed out of the nest in any way. I don't feel that. But like my friends who, you know, I have a friend who has a daughter in college and she wanted to go to medical school and he killed himself trying to save money for her to be able to go to medical school. And I really, while I think he's an amazing dad and I love and cherish him as a, you know, as a father figure, seeing him do that.
Yeah.
I, at the same time, I kept saying like, you know, you just do the best you can. You don't owe your child medical school. Like
right.
It doesn't
right.
really, it doesn't work that way. Not if you're not a lawyer, you're not a, you know what I mean?
Right.
He was a cook.
Oh,
and
God.
So he was just, and so those
well,
parents
not to mention that
sacrifice everything in their lives to create that college experience for a child.
And also you can take a loan out and then if they're in medical school, they'll probably earn it back pretty soon afterwards too, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's interesting.
And also I think it makes the child appreciate it more if they have to work a little bit for it.
You know? I don't know. It's just tricky. And I'm not saying there's a right or wrong way to do it, but I just feel like for people who are parents out there. Now I have so many friends who are parents of toddlers who are agonizing over where they're going to get the money for a college education. I'm like, you know what? It will work out.
I understand.
Too many people are in this position. Something's got to give or
you hope,
you know,
I mean,
or
you hope.
They'll be like me and be a smart kid who gets great grades at a very plain school and still makes a living and is okay.
Yeah.
And I could be making a living. It's not like all I could do is be a performer. Now I'm monologuing. Now I'm talking too
much
about myself.
No, I want to hear. No, I
but
totally.
I could have done, you know, I could be an interior designer right now without a degree in interior design. Like that's
right.
The, you know, you figure well, out
if
how
you,
to get
if
on the work,
everybody
on the job
saw
experience.
This house, they would know that that's the truth.
Well, that's only because I worked. But I mean, like I worked as like, I answered phones at a, you know, I answered phones at a design firm and then I was promoted and then I was promoted again. And like, that's, so there's ways to do it. Even if you don't have, you're not blessed with a tuition that's paid for and also maybe you don't even have to owe hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I heard
in
something
loans.
So interesting the other day on one of the great joys of being out in LA is the great radio that you have out here. So I was listening to someone talking about like how we're like, you know, so stressed out about sending our kids to college so they can get a good education, so they can get a good job when we don't even know what the jobs will be like when our kids are older.
Absolutely.
We can't even conceive of the jobs that are going to appear. We have no idea. So we're educating them for stuff that we don't even know about.
That's a really good point.
Like really, really, we don't know what the educational structure is going to be like.
Yeah.
And what's necessary.
Yeah. And how many robots are going to replace how many people and how many people are going to replace how many robots?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's such a good point.
Listen, this is time has flown by. This is awesome. I got to get into our MASH game. This is our most whimsical.
Oh, dear.
Did you ever play this once again? This is the song of why didn't I tell Zandy I was going to do this before the podcast? Because now I have to explain to you what it is. But it's mansion, apartment, shack, house. Uh-huh. And you would do like, this is something I played when
mansion,
I was little.
Mansion, apartment.
That's what MASH stands for. And then what I do is like three categories. I'll do categories all the way across. Okay. This is a game that we used to play when I was younger.
Okay.
Which I don't know if you sounds like maybe you never played. No. But basically, when in the old days, you would be like, I could explain to this offline because these poor listeners have heard me do this before. But
yeah, I'm sorry. No.
It's all me. But it would be like in the old days, it would just be like, okay, name three numbers of kids that you might have. Name three cars that you would want to drive.
I definitely did that.
Name three. The MASH stands for
your husband's
mansion.
Going to be.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
So that's, and the MASH stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house.
Okay.
So whatever else we do, that's kind of built in. And then like I do like a thing at the end where I'm like, tell me when to stop. And then I pick whatever number it is. And then I process of elimination. Okay. And then I'm like, this is what your future.
Okay.
So this is our fake future for you now.
Good. Okay.
Many a married, engaged, and non-single person, almost entirely all of my guests have been in relationships. But the classic traditional does involve who's your husband going to be. In this case, it could be your fantasy affair that you would never have. It could be just someone you have a crush
on.
God, that you're going to spend
so
a day with.
Completely dangerous.
Could also just be... we'll play the teenage version, and
the
it's like
teenage
what
version. Okay.
Teenage, like what three guys when you were a teenager would you have wanted? Like, was it Michael J. Fox? Was it Ralph Macchio?
Oh, you mean
was
oh,
it,
oh
you know
okay.
What I mean?
You mean like, in theory?
Yeah.
Oh well, this is so easy, and it would be under all four categories.
Yeah,
would be Sting.
Oh my God, you loved Sting. I love it.
Oh
I also
my God,
Sting. You cannot pick
if
Sting.
If you,
all.
You could like call up any high school friend of mine, and they would say, "Oh, any."
Can I tell you something? I'm going to see him in concert on Saturday night. He's playing
hold
with Paul
the same,
Simon.
Well, that I would be excited.
Cool.
He doesn't. He's gotten kind of cheesy. In his
I
old
know
age.
He's very cheesy.
It's very disappointing.
I don't know what they're going to do, but
post
when I found
nose
out they were
job,
playing together,
he got cheesy.
He got a nose job.
Well, I'll tell you why I know because that painting that I painted that my art was of Sting.
Okay.
That. So I stared at his face for so many hours. I'm
going
to find
a picture.
I have. I do have it. I do. I will try to find it. No, I didn't bring it with
God.
Me, but I will.
It's God.
Will
you've got to find it. I am losing my mind. I'm dying to see it. You can only pick Sting
it's
once.
So
you have to pick two other guys.
Two other guys?
Yeah.
And they're like just
the people, like
aspirational.
People you would know. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, well, people
who,
would know.
Like,
okay.
People we would know who they are. Like okay. That you had a crush on when you were a teenager.
So it wouldn't be Michael Marinovich.
I mean, I guess I could put
no,
it's just not
kidding.
As fun as if like it was Kirk Cameron or like, you
okay,
know.
Okay, let's see. Sting.
God, I love it.
Really, it's
I
like
love
a little.
You were painting a portrait of Sting. That's one.
You just have to see this portrait. It has a castle, like a dilapidated castle, and the waves crashing against the castle, and then a partially concealed by a cloud moon. And you just don't even
cover.
Know how ridiculous.
It could have been one of his album covers that you painted.
I put it, they did an art show in the lobby and like people asked me to do their portraits based
God.
On this. It's ridiculous and it's the best thing I've ever
this
painted.
This is the best thing I've ever heard.
It's
so,
so ridiculous.
Excited.
It's so over the top. Okay, so let's see. Sting. God, who did I have a crush on? Oh, in high school, Sting. I'm drawing a blank on that Sting.
your heart belonged to Sting.
Oh, who
oh
else?
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
James Spader. James Spader. 80s James Spader.
Same.
Oh, my God.
Same. Boy, we really would have fought over... we would have fought
oh, I
over
know.
Our fake boyfriends.
Did you watch General Hospital?
I didn't.
Okay.
But I know...
A guy named...
Like
he played... I should ask, do you know Lisa LoCicero? He played, she's a wonderful actress and a lovely woman who lives out here. And she's on General Hospital
amazing.
Now and she's worked with him. He's back on.
I remember
on.
Like a Luke or like a
yeah,
Jake
no, it wasn't.
Like
it was. He played Robert Scorpio and his name was Tristan.
Amazing.
And I don't know, can't remember.
It doesn't
but I was
matter because I'm putting Robert
deeply,
Scorpio
deeply,
because that's
deeply, 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 deeply in love with him. Deeply. If you had
so
asked
much.
Me when I was little, I would have said Kojak. That was who I had a huge crush.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
But
oh,
no.
Oh, my God. Those are brilliant. Okay,
Robert
this is
Scorpio,
Spader,
James Spader.
And Sting.
That's pretty good. That's
classic.
Pretty good.
I'm going to take it back and say, yeah, you live in LA now, so now you have to get excited about cars. Not true. But like that was cars. One of the ones in the, that was one definitely one of the old school categories too. So give me three cars you would drive.
I don't know cars that well. I like my car, but it's not very exciting.
What is it?
It's a Jetta wagon.
Great.
Putting really? It in. I mean, I've actually always wanted a Jetta. I don't know why.
There you go.
I think Jaguars are gorgeous.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Like old school Jaguars. There not you the go. Boxy ones, but
no,
like the
sleek.
Yeah, sleek.
Yeah.
And then what's, oh, I guess an Aston Martin.
Perfect.
Right?
Perfect. This is super old school. I'm loving it. Yeah. Three places that you have a vacation home.
By the way, well, New York City I have point. To say, I mean, this, I have to say the Hamptons because great. Not because of the scene, but because it is so really beautiful.
Oh yeah.
It's like legitimately beautiful and there's a reason why people want to go out.
Absolutely.
There. Absolutely. And then maybe in a vacation home or
could
a
be,
home.
Or could just be like a second home. So maybe you could have a second home in New York. I'm giving you that option.
Paris.
Great.
It's not really a vacation. I mean, is that?
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah. Because please, it's basically a place where you would like to be able to spend as much time as you wanted.
I have to do four categories for that. Then how about Sicily?
You only get three. You only get three. And right now you have not picked New York City. So that's very,
oh, but that's not a vacation home. That's
but
where
like,
I want to live.
Like your
oh, where I
want to
live.
This is like, well, oh yeah, no, we'll do where you want to live. We'll do.
Yeah,
okay.
No,
so
that's
this is
vacation.
So the, yeah.
Home.
So these are vacation homes. All
yeah,
right. So
no,
New
no.
York City.
Well, then I have to move. Okay. So move Paris to where I'd like to live.
Great. Got it.
And then vacation home, scratch that off and yep. Put Nova Scotia.
Oh, good one. Haven't been dying to.
Oh, wow. You're in for a treat.
I'm dying to go. Everyone knows that I am one of many young women who obsessed over Anne of Green Gables.
Oh yeah,
did yes. you also?
I didn't obsess, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
I like Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Oh,
no, or
no,
read
no,
it.
No, no, read it to read it. I
never
like the
read
show.
Or seen. Never read. Never
the,
read.
The books are incredible.
Maybe
I'm so upset that I have two boys because we'll never read Little House on the Prairie.
Never say never.
No,
no, really, you know your boys.
I yeah. They're either going to be like little Casanovas or gay.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's, but either way,
I'm happy.
Yeah.
As long as they treat the girls or boys nicely.
You'll make sure that'll be you'll good. Make sure okay. So, main home, New York City, Paris.
New York City, Paris, and definitely not London.
Yeah, same. I feel the same.
I haven't been to that many places. I haven't been to, well, Chapel Hill.
Oh,
Chapel
nice.
Hill.
I've never been, but people do love
Chapel Hill. That's where I went to school.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
great.
That
great,
wouldn't
great.
Be a bad place to live at all.
Okay. Three portraits.
Oh boy.
That you would paint now.
Is this based on what
portraits?
I was
yeah,
saying?
I'm just now I veered off into Zandy specific categories based on our
three
podcast
portraits.
Conversation.
Oh, I'm going to sound so pretentious saying
I
this.
Love it. I'm excited.
Chekhov.
Great.
Three portraits. It has to be someone famous?
Hmm.
You know what? That's hard for me. I mean, I like when I ride the subway, there's some great faces.
Okay, I'm
going to
put subway face as second one.
I mean, really great
like
faces.
Like a great character face.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I don't want to waste time.
That's a really okay.
Let me think.
Could even
maybe
be like
Gloria Steinem. She's got a fantastic, intelligent face.
I agree. Great answers. Oh my God, I can't believe how fast you came up with those answers. I got to say, great improv
Subway?
Skills.
That's not really.
Subway face? No, but it's so true.
I know.
It's so true. I was thinking that. There was some other place I was recently that I was like, God, I'm seeing just like the most wonderful just faces that have seen everything. And oh, yeah, I know. I totally get it. Okay.
And they're unaware of being seen.
And unaware of
being
seen.
Because they're in their own world. So
yes.
They're like, you know, they're not posed. They're not aware of themselves.
Completely agree. Okay. Three movies that this I always like this one that you can go into and live in for as little or as long as you like. just like that, you can just like that total I love imaginary. So yeah. Total imaginary. Just like you can pop into Mary Poppins or you can pop into probably not Metropolitan, that Wood Stillman movie, because that's what you already experienced. Mm. Or like, you know, Star Wars or.
That I would like to.
Yeah. Just not that
I
love,
not movies that I.
Well, it could be like, for example, there might be a movie that you love that's like still so dark you would never want to necessarily pop in. But like, are there characters and a place okay, well, that would be fun to pop
I
into?
I love Babette's Feast.
Oh, wonderful.
That's.
God, I haven't seen that since I was too young to understand it. You know that he just died?
The guy who made that
oh,
film.
Oh, I don't know if I did know that.
He just died. That's one of the best films I've ever seen in my life.
I need to revisit that guy.
That's going
to
make you cry.
Up.
That's no, but in a great way.
Yeah.
Like one of those like
cathartic.
So cathartic and like makes you feel better about humanity cries.
Oh, that's nice.
So good.
Cuz I just lost my shit over Life of Pi and I don't know if I can go back to that.
No, it's not like
soon.
Life of Pi. Okay. No. No, this is great.
I was like unwell.
No, this is like, I'm so happy to be alive.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I love that cry. Okay, good.
Singing in the Rain.
Great.
And what's something that I'd like? You know, any Wes Anderson film would not be bad to pop in.
I agree. I agree.
Those are so beautiful.
Do you want to pick one?
Well, the last one I saw was Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah.
But I'm so excited for the new one. The
I know, me
Grand
too.
Grand Budapest Hotel. Oh, yeah. I'm so excited to see Ralph Fiennes do something funny because I think he is really funny.
I agree with you. I think
he's
such an
so
exciting
funny
choice.
And he has to play so dark, but there's always such a sense of humor in his performances.
Yeah.
And I mean, for example, playing a Nazi, you just can't get more like depressing than that. And he could find like something funny
some
about
it. In it. I know, it's amazing.
I'm so excited for that movie, but yeah, any Wes Anderson film is fine with me.
Okay. These are great. Those are great. How about you have a shop in New York City? You don't have to do any of the like hard, stressful work. It's not like it's really hard to keep the shopkeeper, yeah. But you have the luxury of just having this wonderful shop that is providing some sort of service or goods to the city of New York. Tell me three, if you like, you can sort of place them in a certain area. If you have an idea of like, oh, I would want a shoe shop in Nolita versus a cafe in the Upper West Side or whatever.
Right.
If you have an image of like that, you want to place that where an area where you would want to place them to.
Well, they'd all probably be in the West Village. Cause you know, that's my
love
great
it.
Love. I actually had an idea for like a place that was a half a cafe and then the other half was a play space for kids people to look after the kids. And in between would be a plexiglass wall so the parents could sit and read the paper and have a coffee and talk to other people and see their kids being taken care of in the other room and just have a place where you pay by the hour or half hour or something. So they could just have, I remember when I had my kids and they were really little and I just really needed like adult company and I needed some peace and quiet. And it was,
I don't know why this isn't a thing on every block, honestly, because I feel like
it's
you've
expensive
tapped into something.
And you have to get a license for a coffee, but it's doable. It's
care,
doable.
Yeah. But I think I passed a place in Paris that had this, by the way.
I think it makes total sense.
It's great.
It's such a, when you have little kids, oh my God, it's such a blessing to be able to talk to other adults for a second and just have some peace and quiet.
I love it.
So that would be one idea. Another idea. Mm. Well, there's a store in the West Village that this lovely woman runs and it's called Tyke. And I think I'd like to have a store like that where it's like she has a child. So there's some kid things and then there's definitely adult things, beautiful jewelry. I didn't get those there. I was thinking maybe I did, but I didn't. Beautiful jewelry, some clothing, like, you know, this is all very like silly stuff, but
it's
all chosen by her. It's like just a few artists.
It has its own voice inside and it's her voice.
And
I
everything's
like
beautiful and everything's like packaged beautifully and everything's good quality and it's nice soft materials. And I'm like very, very perhaps too aesthetically inclined. Like I'm definitely a sucker for packaging and stuff like that.
I get into the artistry of it in such a huge way.
Yeah. But it's, you know, you can overdo it.
Yeah.
But but there is something like, there is something to a store where everything is chosen with love.
Yeah.
Not for, by expense, but by love. And yeah, you can tell. And every time I go in there, I see something that I just feel like I can't live without, which of course I can.
Yeah.
of course I can. Oh, and there's also in my old neighborhood, a beautiful secondhand bookstore.
Oh, that's great.
And there's, you know, a guy in there who runs it, and he always has people visiting him, like sitting, having coffee with him. And he knows every single book inside and out, and people can come in and chat with him all day. And it's just one of those places where you're like, this is really special. And I'd love to pretend that I'm super literary and know every book that's ever read, and that anyone could come in and chat with me and buy a beautiful book.
Agreed. Great, great answer. Okay. And then final question is, three skills that you wake up tomorrow and you have an aptitude for them as if you've always been able to do it. Like you're like wonderful at it.
Singing and dancing.
Great.
carpentry.
Mm, I love it.
And let's see. Being able to speak a fluent language perfectly.
Which one?
Well, it would be, I've almost gotten fluent in French. It would be so nice to be fluent in French, although that's really not the most useful language.
I feel the same.
But it would just be nice to like finally like just break that iceberg open. Yeah, it really would be nice.
Agree,
but I mean, you know, Spanish would be more.
Yeah, but this is a theme of fantasy. Oh, okay. So you fantasy. Don't have to be okay.
French. Yeah, it's so pretty.
Okay. Tell me when to stop.
I like French people too.
Me too. Love them.
What?
Tell me when to stop.
Now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Ooh, we got. Okay. So here's what happens. Take a break. Tally up. Get back with results. End of podcast.
Okay. All right.
Feel free to do anything you want to with this time, but I'm pausing it now. Ready to reveal your future.
Okay.
Your fake future, all due respect to David Wing, because I'm about to tell you who your fake husband is. Okay. First of all, I want to rip off the Band-Aid and tell you that you did not end up with Sting.
I think that's probably a good thing, all in all.
He might be kind of creeped out by the portrait, to be honest with you, or saddened that it's his old nose.
I think he wouldn't want to see his old nose.
I think you're right. That's probably why that didn't work out.
And he'd probably like cheat on me and stuff like that.
I mean, we don't.
The tantric sex would be nice, though. That would be nice.
I guess it would. Sometimes I worry about like whether or not a woman can listen. I don't know. It's a whole other conversation. I want you to also
women
be
can
very
get blue-balled.
Proud. They definitely can.
They totally can.
Please. We've all been there.
Yeah.
Right, guys? I have. You did paint an amazing portrait of Chekhov, which I think is quite wonderful.
Oh, good.
You probably did that at either your house in... I'm thinking maybe you did that in your spare time
in your country
house.
Wait, if I didn't marry Sting, then who did I marry?
I'll come back
to
that.
Oh, you're coming back.
I just wanted to
rip
that
Band-Aid
off.
Oh, right.
No, I didn't know what I was doing. Listen, there's no rhyme or reason to this.
Okay.
But you do have two charming houses. Your vacation home, I feel, is where you painted the portrait of Chekhov, and that is in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
And that's probably also where you do some of your carpentry. Because I'm not sure how much of it you're doing at your home, in your house, in the West Village in New York City, which is just walking distance from your little cafe where they have the little area for kids to play.
Oh, my God.
This is sounding pretty good, isn't it?
This sounds perfect.
Yeah. You drive a Jetta wagon.
Uh-huh.
Which is like, that's why I'm starting to feel like I'm getting creeped out by how real this seems. But you know what? If you ever want to just escape into fantasy, you can drop right into Moonrise Kingdom, which also feels very appropriate. It feels like East Coast, sweet, Hamptons-y kind of. It's almost like you got all of that on top. And you're sharing all of this. All due respect to David. You are sharing this with James Spader.
Oh!
Spader.
Yeah, I Young still like James him now. Spader.
I know. He's still
no,
he's
I'm
very
fine
sexy
with him now. He's smart. He's great.
I know.
He's fantastic.
I think you really got a good one. I got to say, of all of these three, it's definitely the favorite for me.
Wow.
I'm really happy
with the way my life is going to turn out.
Life. Yeah, it's pretty terrific. So much fun. Thank you so much for doing
Janet,
the podcast,
thank
Andy.
You. I feel so embarrassed that I got choked up.
It wouldn't be the first.
It was a good lady to get choked up.
Please, I got choked up and it wasn't my story. So who should be embarrassed? If anyone, me. But thank you so much for doing this. I'm so excited that you're in LA. And as we were talking about it, I was thinking about thinking about places that like I would want to maybe take you that will make you soften to it. Cause
there's
stuff
so
I have to
much.
Do for myself when I feel like I hate this place. I have my places where I'm like, you know what? If I just go, I'll feel a little better.
Yeah. I know there's places out there like that here.
And don't worry, you always have your fake mash life.
And I have James Spader to look forward to.
He's going to cheer you right up.
Oh my God, I know he will. I just know it.
All right, guys. Well, we will talk to you next time on the podcast.
Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.